the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch a cat fish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Cause you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Cause when them old boys raised on shotguns, we say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. Grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html where you have access to not one but three separate chat rooms. So, with that said, I had a real crazy dream last night. Apocalyptic style dream. Pretty much the entire world was flooding and running through this dream trying to get to safety with my grandchildren and all that kind of stuff. And it was probably one of the most disturbing dreams I've had in quite some time, but made me think about technology. The chat room, I posted a couple videos in there of a couple different things. One of them, Sky Collection over there, he's doing some really cool stuff in magnetic levitation and pulse motors with pancake coils. He's got a lot of talent. There's a whole lot of people out there. It just amazed me the way they put things together. A lot of talent out there. The second video that I put down there, pretty impressive car. I think this is probably my new favorite car of all time. This car is called a Koenigsegg Regera. It doesn't have no transmission in it. It's got a an internal combustion engine that runs pretty much a generator that runs the doggone rear wheels and all that. So they don't like to really call it a hybrid because of the actual design of it. It's actually got a really impressive torque converter that you just have to go look at the videos of the Koenigsegg and just check out how it's made and all that kind of stuff, and you'd be pretty impressed with the engineering. And not only is the car cool looking, I mean, it does all kinds of nifty stuff, but it's fast. It's real fast. Back in the day when I kept talking about there's going to be a time when people are going to get rid of the regular transmission and they're going to have automatic transmissions, and you're going to see cars that will go in excess of 300 miles an hour. Well, guess what, folks? That day's here. And apparently this pretty hefty price tag on that car too, so if you want one, you better start saving your pennies. Pretty expensive. And I can't even remember what that next video down there in line was because I can't see it. What the heck was that? All right, well, either way, I also got a video on there about another style of magnet motor, basically using magnets as pistons. But anyway, back for a second to that dream. I got to thinking about all the different possibilities of weather anomalies and even man-made disasters for that matter. And I got to thinking about today's technology and the capabilities that we have. If we decided we cared about enough each other enough to make sure that everyone would survive an impending doom or something like that, we have the technology right now to literally design houses that are nearly indestructible. Wind would blow around them. If you got in a flood situation, your house would just float up and everything be fine, be anchored down. And when you, if you had to, you could release the anchor and just kind of bob around out there in the new great vast ocean with your supplies and stuff. And I kept thinking about all these people out there that just build their house out of sticks and whatever, and you know, during the good times everything's fine, you got dry land to stand on.
Three little pigs.
Yeah.
Three little pigs.
One build my house out of sticks, one build it out of bricks, and one build it out of straw. It's obvious which one of those is gonna hold up to the weather. But nonetheless,
big bad wolf's gonna rumble, 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 and cause your house to come a tumbling down, whether you built that out of bricks or sticks or hay. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, nature's pretty tough, but I believe we have the materials available and the doggone technology to literally build indestructible homes that would float and, if necessary, probably even fly through space.
You know, I was gonna say said that they could build an indestructible boat too, and guess what happened to it?
Well, I knew there was going to be a naysayer in the crowd.
I'm just saying, don't challenge. You challenge Mother Nature, she's going to take you down.
Didn't I clearly state nearly, Raymond? Didn't I say that nearly indestructible?
Yes, but I would like to inject my two cents worth there. You know, there's pros and cons on both sides. Argument here, our discussion, let's put it that way. Not argue. We never argue.
Yeah, and I know exactly where you're going. But go ahead.
Alright. You build your house out of straw, you build it in one day. So the wind turns down, the hell with it. Heck with it, you just build it again. You know, I mean, it all depends on what you want that house for. It's like the Eskimos, the Inuits, when they build their ice igloos. They don't live in those things. It's a hunting lodge. It's built temporarily. I mean, the sun comes out and melts those away.
Well,
it's only for a hunting lodge. That's all.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to build me a machine that sends my my dreams out wirelessly to everybody. Everybody on the planet have the same nightmares I got. Just one day, man, I think everybody start getting along because, you know, I watch a lot of different shows and watch a lot of different media outlets and stuff like that, and I see the world in the shape that it is, and it gets me aggravated and I guess paranoid as well, but nonetheless, when you're looking at all the technology out here, we're in the year 2017, for Pete's sake. We should have all this kind of stuff. I mean, if you want to, like, go camping, like you said, just go out there with your little backpack, throw this thing on the ground, and all the pneumatics and air pressure and everything will just inflate your house for you, and bam, it's there. You got your house already. And then when you want to leave, you just poke a hole in it and let it biodegrade. What do you think? No?
That's a good idea, though. Think about that.
Well,
that's cool, too, but whenever you said inflate, I thought, well, what about a pump that basically pumps it up whenever you want it, and deflates it, and lets it compact back down so you can take the poke.
Well, you cut out, like, really bad there, because Raymond was lit up when you were talking. What'd you say?
I said, well, you said poke a hole in it and just leave it behind, but when you said inflate it, the first thing came to my mind was a pump system so that you can pump it full whenever you want it, and it inflates, and then it pumps it empty and deflates it, sucks all back down to the shape that it was whenever you pulled it out of your pack.
Yeah.
And then take it back and reuse it.
That'd be cool, too. I like the idea of recycling, but I was trying to throw in what he was talking about, the straw house. Just build you another one in a couple seconds. 3D printer.
Right. Right. Well, no, I was going to say, though, you could, with flexible solar cells, too, you could run everything off of those solar cells.
Yep.
Make all the structural components out of a flexible battery storage system, too, so that way it's ready to go to pump back up again when you're ready to reinflate it.
See, and I like the way you think, man. I don't see...
Take it with you. And literally every night, you when you get up in the morning, you deflate it, you stick it back in your pack, you keep on going. When you're ready to go to sleep that night, you find a flat patch of ground that's fairly flat, toss that down, flip the switch, and let it reinflate, and there's your tent ready to go again, man.
Yeah, and what technology like they got with, modern-day Kevlar and stuff like that, I mean, I'm positive you could build one. You wouldn't even have to worry about if you put it on a sharp rock. It wouldn't cut a hole in it. You know, it'd be that strong. And so,
right.
You know, with that said, durability goes back to what I was talking about. I honestly believe we could build our houses to withstand the apocalypse, so to speak. You know, it's just having dreams like that and you... I'm not concerned about myself. I'm just concerned, you know, it's terrible sitting around watching everybody else suffer or being afraid and all that kind of stuff. And maybe I watch too many doomsday videos in my life, but it seems like there's like a ruling a class out there, elite in every one of these movies. And they always build themselves some really nifty bunkers, and they pre-plan for everything. They could stay down there for 10 or 20 years and be fine. And it's the average Joe outside that can't afford to, buy all these cool things to be prepared and all that. You got a whole entire doomsday prepper community out there. And I think that even in their best, they can't figure out or afford for every possible circumstance. Now, in the world that we got, if we had, we had some cooperation straight across the board, we could literally ensure that everybody's safety would be, you know, there's a couple places out there. I think it's Japan that actually has some sort of tsunami shelters. Have you ever seen those? They look like bobbers. In case of tsunami, you can jump in this thing and you'll float. Yeah.
No, I haven't either. The only thing I've seen from Japan is that, they have those really tall pagoda-looking buildings, but they're built with bamboo cores. And if you look at that very center core that's holding everything up in the middle, it's swayed all over the place. But the building itself can withstand earthquakes because of that.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. We got technology to... There's actually some skyscrapers that have a pendulum-like thing in the center that do that to absorb any earthquakes or shock stuff. And, you know, with that, and we know about different shapes like the geodesic domes that that Muddy's always talking about. I'd love to build one. You know, basically making them aerodynamic. You know, straight line winds will rip a roof right off a house, but if a straight line wind hit one of those domes, I'd just see it wrapping right around and going on by. You see what I mean? It's less going to hit a lot of surface area, then it's really not going to affect it any. So we could build houses aerodynamic. We could build them self-contained where they'd have their own power source. And probably even if you didn't like your neighbors, you could just move your house, you know? What do you guys think?
Right.
You do equipment and so forth. Sometimes I get really worried about these people. I mean, here they are, planning for a flood, and now all of a sudden, it's not a flood, it's a drought. You know? And then you got people planning for a drought, and all of a sudden, their house looks like it's no fun.
Well, I can't look down on them for at least trying, you know, because as far as the average Joe, if it is a flood, they make out like a bandit. They hit the jackpot because they're safe and all that. But I'm just saying, as a society as a whole, if we actually really seriously wanted to, you know, care enough about humanity to design buildings from start to finish that were, you know, going to withstand all different types of adverse weather, no matter where you was, even if you was in the doggone desert, you'd be able to, you know, withstand a flood. And I say that because if the earth is as old as what some people think it is, and there's a possibility of a massive flood that happened in the past ever happening again, imagine a worldwide flood. That would be messed up, man. Even your tallest bridge be underwater and that kind of stuff. I would just wish you guys could have had the same dream I had. I mean, you'd understood what I was talking about, but watching people trying to run and get to safety and all that kind of stuff, and there really ain't nowhere to go in those kind of circumstances. Find a little bit of high ground somewhere and try to hold out, but then when you talk about all the conveniences of life, such as food and water and all that, if you've listened to the Mad Science Show long enough, you'll at least know how to get electricity if you can find some old junk to work with. But, and possibly even start to grow food. I don't know. I know it's a crazy subject, but look at that doggone car, man, that Koenigsegg. That thing is just one massive, amazing piece of technical engineering. The things that they did with that car, I mean, I'm in love with that car. I'd literally love to have that car. But I don't have $7.4 million to buy one either. So, it ain't happening. I would probably take that $7.4 million and build me the perfect indestructible house out of all kinds of different types of everything from Kevlar to carbon fiber to anything that would be guaranteed to float. What do you think?
I think you're right.
And I'd build it big enough so all my family and friends could get in it. It'd be like 10 times the size of Noah's Ark.
Problem is, you'd have a whole lot more friends than you think.
Probably. But, you know.
I don't think you could do it with one house. I think you'd have to build like four or five for different contingencies, like Raymond was saying.
Yeah. Well, just build like little pods, self-contained pods, and have them all interlinked together, you know.
There's been several times that Thomas and I have discussed this, and it was feasible to actually make a floating island as large as the state of Texas. To build it out of plastic, so it has sealed air bubbles, so it'll float. Therefore, if you have a catastrophe like an unbelievable, like what they call a perfect storm, well, you just crank up the engine and float it out of their way. And well, Lord knows enough plastic in the ocean floating around out there, trash, that you could take it and melt it down and build a thing on out of.
Well, or if it's designed properly, too, even really strong storms like hurricanes and whatnot just go over top of it. Big enough and sturdy enough that a wave or something hits it, and it would just kind of bob a little tiny bit where everything else would just be knocked over and thrown to pieces.
Yeah.
Build a turtle, like a turtle shell, you know?
Well, there's a movie out there. I can't remember the name of this doggone movie for the life of me. I keep trying to remember it, but... essentially, the governments of the world, they knew that there was going to be this big old massive asteroid strike that was going to cause a cataclysmic flood all over the world, and they built all these different arcs, and these things looked like something out of a sci-fi movie, spaceship, you know, but they were actually boats, huge, massive boats. And they were made to withstand slamming in the side of mountains and all kinds of stuff. These things were like, you know, army tanks on water, so to speak. But you had to have a ticket to get on board, man. Unless you was in the right person, or had something to offer, you weren't going.
That sounds like 2012.
I don't remember what the name of the movie was. All I know is that they had these massive arcs they were building underground, and finally the flood came in. I think one or two of them didn't make it out the doggone gate, but the rest of them all made it out and found each other out in the end of the movie there. But either way,
Woody Harrelson was in that movie.
Yeah, I think so.
He was just standing there waiting for it to come and get him. He knew it was coming.
Yeah, I think in that one particular scene, it might be the same movie I'm thinking about. The dad and his daughter standing out there on the ocean while this massive wave is coming in. Yeah, that'd be a terrifying deal, you know. Not necessarily because I'm afraid to die or anything. It's just I want my kids to be able to live, you know. I want them to be able to enjoy life. I want them to be able to grow old and their children be able to do the same thing. I just think when you look at all these science fiction movies out there about Star Wars and Star Trek and think about where we could be as opposed to where we are in technology, we should be so much further advanced than what we are right now. You know, if it wasn't for industry and greed and government and all that kind of stuff, if mankind actually had the same mindset that everyone was important and we could save every single soul on this planet if we wanted.
You know, you just hit the nail on the head, because we've said this several times. The technology is here. It does exist. They're just not putting it together like form. That's all. I mean, everything we ever talk about on this program, it's already here. It called plug and play. I mean, all of it's here now. Has been for the past 5 or 6 years.
Do you realize
everything? It's just nobody's putting it together.
Do you realize how far the carbon fiber technology has actually came in the last few years?
Man, it grows every month that you can't possibly learn it all, because there's so many different people working on finding different uses, different ways, and different ways to even produce it cheaper, faster, easier, and stronger, and better. I mean, every month, there's so much knowledge on any one thing that you can't possibly learn it all that one month in a lifetime.
I see a point in history in near future where 3D printers that have the capability of printing any type of material. I mean, just what I've watched with what Thomas has done and what I've watched of some of the newer advancements in some of these and different polymers and stuff that they can print with, and it's just incredible. And I can see a point in time when there'd be actually an actual factory that would build the shell of a house, you know, and all you got to do is basically get it home and snap it together like Legos and hook up all your power and all that kind of stuff.
I was not on these 3D printer things. Man, God, we spent hundreds and hundreds of hours looking at checking out what this person's done and what that person's done. There's people out there that's actually built 3D printers that they're equipped with steel. I mean, all they do is simply take a wire welding machine and hook it up to a 3D printer instead of plastic, they're printing with steel. You print with copper, print with aluminum, you print with concrete. Isn't that right, Tom?
Yep.
Well,
I was actually if you use polyethylene, because it is such an easy plastic to make, 3D print Lego blocks that are, you know, the size of a center box and have extra ports and whatnot to run your electric. Okay.
Raymond, can you mute your mic for a second? Thomas, you're cutting out real bad because every time Raymond blinks, you cut out.
Sorry.
All right, try it again.
Oh, I was just saying that with high-density polyethylene, I was thinking 3D print them out of plastic like that, make giant Lego bricks that are the size of, like, cinder blocks that have ports on them. They're not just pegs and holes, but the pegs have holes going through them, so you can port your conduit for electric and all that stuff through them, or even print the components so when you snap them together, you're literally snapping your wiring right together. Snapping your plumbing right together. You just pick the blocks that you want to route the plumbing and the electric where you want through the walls and whatnot.
See, I like that. That's amazing. And there's a lot of different glass-filled nylons out there that would make that doggone building so tough, it's ridiculous.
Well, I'm talking, polyethylene. You can go with, if you have to, go with the ultra-high molecular weight, which is tougher than Kevlar.
Wow.
And it's still the same carbon and hydrogen helix that all polyethylenes are made out of, so got an almost unlimited supply of that.
And seeing how those 3D printers, you could sit there and model the entire deal. Imagine one big enough to literally print out an entire house. That would be amazing, man.
Yeah, it just needed a framework for the arm to move around that basically squirts the plastic out, if that's what you're going to do.
Well, once you got that big thing printed out on your house, how do you get it off the deck?
Well, you'd bring the frame out there and just, it literally folds up, sticks in the back of a pickup or something, and then you assemble it and let it print the house and then disassemble it from around the house and load it up to go to the next site.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. That'd be brilliant.
Yeah, print it on site.
That'd be awesome too. But sit there and watch as your house is being 3D printed right before your very eyes.
If you're doing that, then you can literally just print what you need too. You end up with some very alien looking things or very organic looking things that look like where you see pictures of what the nervous system or the blood vessel system looks like inside of an organism.
Yeah.
And there's actually enough stability though in the design where it's all interlinked together to make stairs and floors and stuff like that, even though it's completely open framed, you know. Someplace where, like, the weather's never really bad, you could do that. Or if you're not planning on actually living in it, if it's just going to be like an outdoor thing, kind of like a pavilion, but, you know, a whole house that's open enough that basically it shades you, but because it's like built almost like a tree. You know, where it's actually got pieces, like shingles on the top that are real organic looking, but they're open enough that air can flow through, but they're overlapped enough so that basically it blocks sunlight from overhead, blocks the rain off of you.
Speaking of sunlight, do they make UV type additives that you can mix in with the plastic so the sun wouldn't eat it up so quickly?
Hmm. I don't know about the sun heating it up, but they do make to keep degrading.
Eating it up, degrading it, that's what I was trying to say.
Okay, yeah. Titanium dioxide.
Well, see, that would be brilliant.
That's the first go-to, titanium dioxide. That's what they put in styrofoam so it doesn't degrade, because the walls are so thin that a little bit of sunlight and it would just basically turn into powder and fall apart.
Wow. Well, like Raymond just said a minute ago, we got every doggone piece of technology available. I would just love to see it. I'd love to see it happen. I don't know if it'll happen in my lifetime, but I'll keep talking about it, and hopefully it will at somebody's lifetime. But I just don't see no reason why people have to keep on building houses the way that we do when wind can come by and just strip that house right off the foundation and, you know, lose a lot of people's lives in the process. And not to mention...
It's not going to happen until somebody figures out a way to make a profit.
Well...
Profit is profit-driven. Once somebody figures out how to do it in such a manner to make a profit, it will happen. But it's not going to happen until that does.
I'm sure that's the case. You know, insurance companies wouldn't be happy with an indestructible house or a nearly indestructible house for people that...
There's another problem with that too, though. It's not just based on when there's a profit to be made off it. It's also based on that somebody runs into a situation where they have no other way to make profit that's easier. Because water, it's like people are like water. They're going to flow the easiest route to get downstream. They're not going to take a tougher route, even if it's only marginally tougher. They're still going to take the easiest route to get to the path of profit. So it's going to have to be the easiest path that all other paths are blocked. And then you're going to see somebody that's going to find that they use their ingenuity to produce it, you know.
Well, I see basically 3D printing is only guiding, your X and Y axis and basically putting the nozzle where it needs to be at any given time. I can see them actually being able to hook a doggone computer up to a concrete machine that would literally lay it out where you wanted it, you know? Set your bricks for you or whatever.
That's what they're doing.
Showed me a video of them doing exactly that shit is.
See? Yep.
It's a 3D printer machine. The sucker is at least 20 feet high, about 30 feet wide, and operates about 50 feet long. It uses the same identical system they use today. Have been for the past 30, 40 years of pumping concrete. They just pump it in a very thick slurry and just spread out a whole daggone building.
Wow.
Well, they're using even ground up old buildings too to mix into the actual cement.
Yeah.
To make the make concrete too.
Exactly. They're using old concrete as an aggregate.
Well, that's pretty cool.
And they just pick those chunks up and stick them all together to build a building in a matter of, like, you know, 20, 30 minutes.
There's a company that's doing that. They're taking old concrete and grinding it up. At less than 1 mile from my house, they have mountains of this ground-up concrete. So, there you go. Like I said, it's all there. Somebody needs to plug it in and turn it on.
There's also one other science fiction kind of deal that I could see could actually be science fact. I don't know if you guys remembered the scene from Superman where he throws this crystal out there and basically builds this giant structure of crystals. Do you see that as a possibility? Being able to grow a house?
But not as fast. That was a movie.
Hold on.
Big possibility.
You're talking about nanotechnology.
Well, that would be cool, though.
You know what the danger is with that, though?
Yeah,
Based on programming. If the programming gets corrupted, what if it decides to build the whole entire planet into one giant building, including the people, breaking down people and making them into parts of the building?
Hey, that's kind of rude.
That's where the fear of nanotechnology is called the gray goo, where basically the nanotechnology goes crazy and breaks everything down to make more of its own nanotechnology, so you end up with just an even gray goo across the entire surface of the planet.
Gosh, that's worse than the doggone worldwide flood, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I'm a people person, man. I want everybody to be all right. I want everybody to be safe and happy and all that kind of stuff. I know what I'm asking for is like too big of a deal for modern people to try to grasp. But
water isn't insisting on you turning into water. It's just insisting that you coexist with it or get out of the way. That nanotechnology wants you to be turned into it.
Well... even if we just designed some clothes that would like be you know, puncture proof and basically self inflate. If there was a worldwide flood, everybody would be bobbing up there. You know?
You know, I like what Thomas just said. It reminded me of a saying, lead, follow, or get out of the way.
Yep. Couldn't we design clothes like that that would be protecting the people?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's not something that's beyond the realms of somebody being able to afford to buy a self-inflating suit. Of course, there'd be a lot of jokers running around throwing water on people to self-inflate them or something. Look at that. You were skinny and now you're fat.
You know, the suit is already designed. An Iron Man suit made out of plastic that would stop a 50 caliber bullet.
Well, there we go. See, everybody was in an Iron Man suit, and we could protect them from the apocalypse.
And you put inside the Iron Man suit a little bit of hydraulics, a little bit of solenoid,
yeah.
And you get a person that's 5-6 times stronger than normal.
But would it be safe from all the your mama jokes?
I don't know about that, because if they got communications in there, I'd have to have a way to block your signal out so I wouldn't have to listen to it. Because I'd be tormented as I'm in my suit with your mama jokes all day. Man. Anyway, the technology is available. I'm just saying, I wish that the world could get their act together as far as clean, renewable, alternative energy. I think we've proven time and time again that it could be done if people seriously wanted to get to it. And, you know, some of the college-educated people that I talk to, mechanics about running cars on water, they just look at you cross-eyed as if you don't know what the heck you're talking about. And that's because pretty much the school books put limits on them. The school book put a brick wall in front of their face, and they can't see past it. They can't see over it or under it or around it. Heck, I'm standing on the other side of that wall. And I'm saying, look, I know you can do it. Water is one of the most stable molecules. It is probably the most stable molecule out there, but it's also one of the most destructive ones, too. Water can eat through stone and metal. If you pressurize water, you can use it like that. And they do, too. They got actual band saws out there that don't have a steel blade on them. They just have a high jet of water that sprays right through the doggone material and gives a smooth cut as well. That technology's been around for quite some time. And so,
No heat. Hey, no heat either, like yeah. You get from a laser.
Yeah, so you can pick it up right after you get through cutting it. Wouldn't hurt you. But it's just amazing.
I'm going to stick my hand out there near where that nozzle's at. Push that thing out of the way with a stick. The main idea is that it won't warp or damage the material from the heat.
Yeah.
Like using plasma or a cutting torch or something like that.
But, yeah, I definitely wouldn't put my hand in front of it, because I went to the car wash one time and accidentally hit my arm with that doggone high-pressure sprayer out there. It actually put a bubble under my skin. It scared the crud out of me. But,
Did it cut through the crud? Oh.
Ha-ha! You're just too funny, man. Tee-hee-hee.
Well, Jay.
Oh, man. Leave it up to Thomas. Alright, so anyway, the technology to cut through stuff using water and plasma and just some of the, what you was talking about earlier about being able to print with steel, I was sitting there visualizing like a 110 wire welder hooked up to a doggone computer that would guide it around in a perfect circle or whatever. You literally could print stuff out of metal. You know?
What? Ten? You shoot 20.
Well, I don't know that. I don't. All I got's a 110. Except for that one that you sent over that could be hooked up both ways.
I gave you a 220.
I know. That's what I just said. Attention to detail.
Alright. But it can be done.
Yeah.
In fact, it has been done. I mean, Thomas sent me a video of people actually doing it.
I watch in the auto industry is these robots that they got. that normally they used to have guys on each side of a conveyor belt, and they would weld their particular spot as the car came by or whatever part come by, they'd spot weld it, and then the next one in line do it, and then they replace all those people with robots. And so now the robots are doing it, so they've actually been building stuff, you know, before. You see what I mean?
I do. Well, in fact, over 40-some years ago, I helped build the Chevrolet, Corvette assembly plant in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And it was all robotic. I mean, the people were so excited. The plant covered 40 acres. In fact, one of the buildings covered 40 acres. You know? And the whole plant was robotic. There was 17 miles of chain in grooves in the floor to pull these cars around. And the entire plant was run by a crew of 8 people.
Wow.
The whole town was excited about the plant being built because it was going to bring jobs to the little town. Shoot. 8 people run the whole plant.
You know,
robotics.
When you look at the doggone Jetsons, and watch how things happen in that cartoon back then. I mean, it just boggles my mind that we're not there yet. Maybe I'm just impatient. I'm waiting for the time when technology finally gets so doggone advanced. You go up there, you talk to the computer, have a conversation with it, you know, and basically make friends with a computer, and you say, look, I want to build this. And then the computer starts helping you map it out, do all the math and all that kind of stuff. Because if I had a supercomputer access to one like that, man, I'd be building stuff all day long, every day. I'd be having fun at it. Because you'd actually get to see your brain come to life.
The computer would get all mad at you because you're working it to death.
Hey, there's actually something like that in the Star Rigger trilogy.
Really?
It's on what they call Microcosmos, which is basically a planet sized construct that's just a flat disk with artificial gravity, and both sides have basically gravity pulling down to it, so you can exist on either side. On the reverse side of it, there's a giant complex that's made with the most advanced in the universe, out of all the universe, because it's basically technology from, you know, like the end of the universe. You just go in and you talk to the central hub, and there are hundreds of artificial intelligent programs running throughout the entire place. And they'll build basically anything that intrigues them.
Wow.
Anything artistic, which, you know, when they get there, because they've been out there for millions of years and no one has been by, they're starved for attention. They're just like, we'll build anything. Just, you know, come hang out with us.
Well, will they let me on that boat?
You gotta get all the way to the end of the skyway, man.
Oh, man.
Across the universe to get to it. Well, all the way back to the beginning, just outside the very center of the beginning of the universe.
The question I guess the next question I got, I think, can I get a GoFundMe account to build me a ship so I can get there? Oh, man, I don't know. I just got, like, all these designs in my head, and I would just love to see these things out there, you know, being built. You know, these little projects that I got going on don't even scratch the surface of what goes through my brain. That I just see this world in a whole different fashion, and I think that if we could ever get the world motivated, we could literally, you know, make this world an awesome place. It'd be cool to live in, man. I like shows like doggone Back to the Future, whenever they go to the future or whatever, and you see all the different advancements and stuff, you know, flying cars and, you know, basically clothes that dry themselves out and that kind of stuff. I believe we already have all the knowledge able to do all that stuff. You know, it's just getting the world motivated, speeding it up or something. I don't know. Could be very well crazy or insane or whatever, but I just, after having that dream last night, and I'm thinking, man, I could understand how Noah would have felt, you know, back in the day whenever he was told there was going to be a flood, you know, and you hurry up and build this ark. Well, I don't necessarily think it happened in a hurry, but it probably took a long time to build it, but either way, nonetheless, moving towards the future, we could start building houses that would, you know, look just like a doggone house, but be able to keep people safe, you know. Giant flood comes by, your house just kind of floats up. You'd go down by any one of the major rivers in the world, you probably see communities where people have been living down there for years and probably generations, and they have figured out that instead of rebuilding their house every time it floods, they just put their house on pontoons, and if it floods, the house floats up and the garage floats up, and then whenever the water recedes, then again, you know, they just basically go back down to where they were. And they even have boats connected to the side of their house in case all heck breaks loose and it floods. They can still get to work, you know, get in a boat and drive over to the shore. But that's not high tech or anything, but it's engineering, and that's one of the reasons why I threw that magnet deal in there, this little motor in there. This guy made out of parts, it's homemade, but it's a lot of engineering that went in somebody's little homemade lab. And so if that person right there had access to a really nice lab where they could have brilliant minds around them that had a lot of craftsmanship, he could take that design to its maximum potential. You see what I mean? Like, for all the ideas that I've got, I can't manufacture them to the perfection that I'd like to see them. I know what it needs to be, but this plasma reactor has been a thorn in my side for a long time because I always have to go out and find somebody who has a skill set to either make the glass or, you know, do something that I can't do. And if you had a 3D printer capability, I could literally sit there and put that into the computer and tell it to print me out this plasma reactor, you know, and it'd be done. A project that takes forever and a day to get done is frustrating. You ever had that problem?
Yes, I have. Many times.
It shouldn't be like that. We got the technology to make things happen. It's the funding that kills you if you want to get some parts or go around. Like right now, I feel like I'm from the year 2025, and I'm back here, and I'm trying to find things that don't exist yet so that I can put these things together and get my ride fixed so that I can get back home.
Yeah, but the thing is, you're back here looking for things that don't exist. The problem is, they probably do exist. It's just so well unknown that there's not that many people know where to tell you to go to get what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Because what you're looking for doesn't exist already. I mean, you want these glass painters to do this and that, to build this confined unit for this plasma reactor that you're building. I'm telling you, point blank, it already exists. You don't have to get somebody to make it. You just have to find somebody to know where to get it.
Yeah, that's true. That's the thing, man.
Speed Pyrex. So what about two Pyrex poles that are already made? You know, and just buy them.
Yeah, as long as you can be able to cut through the Pyrex with diamond blades or whatever to install the hardware inside there and then seal it back up and all that kind of stuff, yeah, that'd be great.
But it already exists.
Yeah, that's the trick.
And I'm set up with it because I can do it. I've done it 100 times.
Well, help me build my time machine, man.
There you go.
I'll go back and fix a few things and go forward and get some more ideas. And, you know, if I could just jump back and forth through time and check out all the technology, I'd be the happiest camper in the universe. Because every day whenever, like you said, there's things out there that exist that you just don't know, but they're already here. Every day I see something else that amazes me. You know, even looking back as far as the late 1800s, which is what I based this plasma reactor off of, the old mercury arc rectifier. Had they known back then what they had access to, I don't think you'd see any nuclear power plants today. I think that they'd be doing it a whole different way, using a whole different method in order to generate electricity to do what it is that we do.
Hey, Shazaz, do me a favor and look in the chat here.
Alright.
I'm gonna send this to you again. This is the second time I've done this, man. You were complaining about this before we discussed the temperature of the plasma and whatnot.
Yeah.
And this is the exact same link that I sent you last time, and I found it using Google the exact same way I found it last time.
Oh, yeah. You see the tubing link? I got that bookmarked.
I was going to say, man.
Fuse
quartz.
I mean, quartz.
Big pieces are expensive, but like you said, it is out. You can't get it. That's not Pyrex either. That's quartz.
Yeah.
Solid quartz. You can't get any better than that. Pyrex is only good up to a certain point. This stuff's actually good beyond that point.
Well, the only way that I could afford that kind of deal right there would be some sort of massive infusion or cash, or go to some company that would listen to what I had to say and actually fund building it.
Hey, hold on a second, man. You spent $150, right?
Yeah.
That's on two pieces, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see here. What was the diameter of that? 4 inches? 5 inches?
About 4 inches.
4 inches? Okay, so let's see, that's 130 millimeters. $152. I'm not sure why the... Oh, that's the... That must be because of how thick these balls are. They got some here. Let's see.
About 7 inches long.
120... Well, we're talking by the foot. $128 for a 135-millimeter in diameter tube.
Well, that's probably doable.
That's inside diameter. 1 foot long, 135 millimeters.
Yeah, that's probably doable. But either way...
That's about 5 1/3 inches in diameter inside.
Isn't that exactly what I just said 3 or 4 times earlier? That everything that he needs is already exists. He just needs somebody to help him find it.
Yep.
It already exists.
Well, I tried to make Shaziz Radio like a central hub for ideas so that anybody could find anything they needed, and we'd all get together and start working on everything. A few of us have got together and worked on projects, but we need a massive effort towards everybody out there who's interested in alternative energy and alternative livings and stuff to literally get together with each other and start networking to the extent or... Hey, we need something over here that you got. We can trade you for something we got. We can make it for you or whatever, and design stuff and put these technologies out there without them being in the hands of major companies that's either going to charge everyone an arm and a leg or suppress it until the time's right when they can make a lot of money. And that's pretty much what happens. It ain't like they didn't have the iPhone 6 when they had the iPhone 5.
Am I correct, or am I just wishful thinking? But it seems to me like it would be easier and safer to drill a hole in than glass.
I don't know.
Am I right?
As long as the diamond bit could get through there, you can get the hardware in and out.
I would do cut quartz in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
But the quartz is not as brittle as the glass would be. So therefore, you could drill a hole in it a lot safer and a lot cleaner, with less fear of cracking.
Well, that's just one piece of technology. There's so many other things that I'd love to see get off the ground. A lot of people out there in the alternative energy that are trying all different types of coil configurations and different types of circuitry in order to try to do things. If you could get them folks into the same lab and allow them to troubleshoot, and if they could get along long enough, but it wouldn't take no time at all. There'd be so many things being built. All I can see is it benefiting society as far as being able to advance. Now, you know, just some people afraid of technology. Like now that Thomas told me about nanotechnology basically turning the planet into gray goo, I don't want to live in a world like that. That's jacked up.
Yeah, it is.
I don't want to be part of the machine. I want to be, you know, helping build the machine. So, I don't know. Maybe we don't need machines at all. Maybe we need to just get down to the earth and start going back to the old caveman style way of thinking.
You know, I like this quartz thing. It's so much better than Pyrex. Easier to work with. It's no more expensive. Holy cow. Yeah. Like I said, everything is already there. Just need to find the parts, plug them in, and turn it on.
Yeah, well, in the state of affairs that I find myself in, it's also going to have to do with funding, too.
Well, quit telling people you don't want donations. There are people out there that don't have your knowledge. There are people out there that don't have your skill, but they have money, and they wish you would allow them to help you. They can help with money, donations, to help get the proper materials you need to do your thing.
Yeah.
Depends on how far you're willing to go to build this, too. They got pieces of this stuff that's literally only $1.40 a foot.
Well,
that's... No, just a little bit greedy. He wants to keep all the pizzazz, the spotlight. He doesn't want anybody to help him. You're greedy.
No, it ain't got nothing to do with no attention or spotlight. There's a lot of people out there that are basically pulling scams on people. And yeah. I don't want to be part of that crowd. I don't want anybody to have the opportunity to say I'm part of that crowd, because I ain't like that. I ain't never going to be like that, period. But as far as, knowledge, I've sat there, I can give the knowledge away forever and a day, but if nobody's willing to take it, then it just ain't going to be done.
Well, maybe the people that got the money, but they don't have the skill.
Well,
you got the knowledge, you got the skill, you just don't have the money.
Yeah, but it ain't about not wanting the spotlight or anything like that. If it was all about me, I would just be like some of the YouTubers out there that I know that won't even talk to a guy like me because they don't want nobody to make them look less smart than what they are.
You don't want to talk to those people. They don't want to listen to you. You don't want to talk to them.
Yeah.
You want to talk to people that want to listen to you. And the thing is, you're not asking for donations, but quit refusing them.
Well,
nobody wants to help you, you let them.
All right, well, we need to get some technologies out there. I got a lot of ideas. I want to build an engine, and I'm looking for any crew that wants to help me build that engine. I don't have the milling equipment necessary to do it, and if I did have it, the milling equipment necessary to do it, I'd probably have to drag somebody over like Thomas who could figure out how to use it.
Perfect, but when I build something, I work within a 1/16 of an inch. Thomas works to 10,000ths of an inch.
Well, Thomas said something a second ago that got me thinking, and I might just take his advice on that deal, was that everything that could be made on one scale could be scaled up or scaled down. And I could afford to build things on micro scale, and I could probably even get it to, look really nice as well, and be able to work it. It's just when you try to build something the size of what I'm working on over here, you got to get these things to be sealed up in order for them to function properly. But maybe Thomas's way is the way to go, to show him the technology on a smaller scale, and I can afford that. So we'll just have to see how it goes then. What do you think?
I think you're right.
But anyway, that's some really cool technology out there, man. There's a lot of brilliant minds that need to come to the table. We need to get these folks the tools necessary to do what they need to do. And
hey, look in your chat again. There's your copper tubing, so that way you don't have to build it super big. You can get super, super tiny copper tubing from those guys. Super tiny. And if you don't want to go with copper, you can make it out of aluminum or brass, too.
Cool. Do they also have stainless steel?
Yep.
See, now that's the ticket right there. If you made the stainless steel version of the plasma reactor, you could literally use it as a hydrogen cell as well. And it looks like, to me, like I'm looking at one part that's got some tubing inside a tubing. It almost looks like a telescopic antenna.
If you put any pressure on the inside of one of those tubes or the outside of the other tube, you can literally slide those together, and it's an airtight seal.
Cool.
So, and they're almost airtight already. I mean, they'll leak, but if you put pressure in there with it fast enough, it'll cause it to telescope out.
Yeah, I got to bookmark this too. See, that's what I'm talking about. There's all kinds of materials out there, man.
But you find what you're looking for on there and go jump onto eBay and use the name and the model number, and you can. There's tons of people selling that stuff all over the place, so you ain't got to pay these guys their price either. They jack their price up because they want you to go buy it from their distributors, from the retailers, which most hardware stores somewhere have the stuff on a shelf somewhere.
Yeah, I do a lot of hopping around from hardware store to hardware store trying to find things, and that gets to be aggravating after a while.
Well, Ace Hardware, every Ace Hardware carries this stuff. If they don't have it in stock, they can order it and have it shipped in, and you can kind of come back and pick it up in a couple of days.
Well, that's what I love about Ace Hardware. I love it. I mean, I don't do it as often as I do Home Depot, because most of the thing I do is everyday stuff. But if I need something really specific, really technical, I go straight to Ace Hardware. If they don't have it, you tell them what it is, they'll find it and get it for you.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like that one called Menards that I like going in there, because they got all kinds of stuff that you didn't even know existed. It's pretty cool. Well, hardware store.
You need a custom vendor to bend it in really bizarre shapes to make that thing, so that you don't have to fill it with sand or salt or something.
Oh yeah,
let me know. Make something.
That would be great. If you could make one that would build the coils the size of what they got right now, see, that's the problem I had to fill them with sand, because if you don't, they'll not sand, but salt. But if you don't do that, then they'll keep them trying to get them that tight.
Shazams.
Yeah.
I can make you a coil bind bender that will literally make something smaller than a ring that will fit on your finger, with tubes that are literally smaller than a toothpick inside.
Cool.
A lot of copper.
How soon can we get this done?
Well, it depends on the other projects.
Well, it's...
But the way they're setting up out there, all I got to do is just go out there and throw some stock on it. And yeah. I've got the stock. Just got to get some copper tubing for it.
Well...
Actually, I have copper tubing that's a 16th of an inch on the inside already.
I'd like to build these in kit form. That way, if anybody out there wanted to support the Mad Science, if they could buy one of these kits and build these things and try them out and run their experiments with them. So, I already know how to cut the glass now. That was a good deal. You can get you a tile cutting saw. There's these wet tile cutting saws that my friend Justin had. He loaned me his. And I was able to almost perfect cut a glass wine bottle, and I was like really afraid of it at first, but once I seen how the dang thing worked, and as long as you keep that glass steady, it'll get almost a perfect cut every time. So you just got to do it slow and carefully. But with some other ideas out there, we might not even have to cut glass at all, except for drilling the hose through there. In reality, the plasma reactor that I'm talking about doesn't necessarily have to be glass, but definitely has to be insulated away from each one of the connectors on each side, so that they're not shorting out. But the glass is so that people can actually see the reaction that's going on in there, so you can explain it, so you can use it as a teaching tool.
That we need to substitute glass with the word quartz.
Well, if I get the quartz tube, I would go with the quartz tube.
There you go. The quartz will take much more heat, doesn't crack as fast, and it's easy, and it's not too expensive. It is within the realm of what we are willing to spend. I am, anyway.
I say, with that smaller K&S tubing and everything in a coil bender, get them paint and make literally, you know, like I said,
that's my idea. Thomas, would you say that piece of quartz would cost $115, something like that?
It was $128 for the one that I was looking at. That was the lowest price, or the highest price you could get without going over $150. But they, like I said, they go all the way down to like $1.40 for a 1 millimeter in diameter tube, so it's all based on size.
I'll tell you what, does he need one, or can he need two of them?
I think it can be done with one, because they sell quartz plates too, and you know, you and I both know that with a diamond grinding that you can drill holes in it.
Yes, exactly. So, easier than glass.
Mm-hmm.
Less fear of cracking or busting. So does he need one or two?
Two plates and one tube.
All right. So all total, what's it going to cost?
Shoot, I've already closed that window out. No, here it is. Never mind. Gonna find out. Okay, yeah, there's the measurements on it. What size are we going with? I mean, are we gonna try to build it with the same size as what he's got, or do we want to build it smaller with smaller tubing?
The thing is, it'll stand more heat, so you could build it smaller.
Yep. Well, it'd be easier to transport if you're gonna ship one up to somebody else too.
Yes.
Just gotta remember, you have to be able to get the coiled tubing inside of it.
So what does he need? Roughly $300, $350, $400, what?
I think we could probably do it within that range and still have some money left over. Which you're going to probably need some money left over anyway for, you know how it is. Like 2-3 extra unaccounted trips or...
Hold up. Let's just say $500, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So now I want to make an announcement to all the listeners out there. If you'll send Shaziz a donation to help with this, $1, $5, I don't care what, I will match every dollar donated up to $500. In other words, I'm willing to kick out $250 toward this, but I want the listeners to take part. I want them to start acting with us. Okay? So every dollar that Shaziz toward this program, nothing else. And I push this. If you tell him this donation is for this plasma reactor, then he will not use a dime of that money for anything but that. And that's how much faith I have in him. I will match dollar for dollar every donation up to $500 total. That's a call for help from the listeners. Okay? Now, it said my piece. Y'all go ahead.
Huh. Well, if we get
prepare to put dates together, and I'll get all the information of exactly what we're going to need to build it, and that way you can put it all on the page so they see what we're actually spending the money on. Plus, that makes it open source too, so if they want to make one themselves, they can, but if they want to buy a kit for them later, whenever you decide to put the kits out, you can do it. Because these are one-off prices. I'm sure if you were buying a big bulk of them, because you're going to make a massive out of them and sell them, you could probably get them to do a little extra custom work on them and still get them at a cheaper price. That we can pass the savings on a little bit to them and make a little on the side for the next project.
Well, I'd like to see this be a joint venture out there. That's definite.
That's what I was trying to say. I want people out there to be a joint venture. Those of you that do not have the skill or knowledge or whatever, but you got the faith, Doesn't even start a fender, doesn't even fire a car. It doesn't matter. I'll match it. Until we get what Chizzes needs to do this thing and do it right. No more glass. Okay, it's either Pyrex or quartz. And quartz is going to be a lot better. The better the equipment he has to build the thing with, the more likely it is to work.
Jermaine also mentioned it earlier, and I think I already got the circuitry for it. Those plasma globe igniters that they got, you can run them thing for hours at a time. They don't even get hot.
Right.
So I think I'm gonna.
Hey, anybody who's wondering too where that money's gonna be going when they're buying this? This stuff's all manufactured up in Ohio, so it's an American-made product.
Well, see, now if everybody networked out there and did the same doggone thing, we could get a lot of stuff accomplished, man. There's a lot of brilliant individuals out there that have a lot of talent. Those are the folks I've been trying to bring together in what I like to call the dream team. And looks like Stephen posted a link in there for a bell jar made out of quartz. Cool. Doggone it, look at that one, man. Are you guys in the chat room? I'll have to show you this one.
No.
Yeah, I'll copy the link and post it over to you.
But yeah, they don't have bell jars. They do have lab equipment, though.
That one there, depending on what size that thing is, two of those butted up to each other with a one of those seals that you can actually clamp down on the side there. It's got like a rubber gasket in between. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
Hey, why couldn't you just build a plasma reactor inside of a bell jar coming up from underneath it and use quartz standoffs for everything up inside there?
Well, you could.
Just use the normal base, use the fused quartz bell jar for top of it, set everything up with everything running inside of it, and then hook up to a vacuum pump. And, you know, a bell jar is made to be vacuumed out.
Click on that link.
And hundreds of quartz crystals that would be perfect, absolutely perfect for the standoffs.
Yep. And buying standoff, like quartz tubing and stuff like that, from these people would be a lot cheaper than buying those bigger pieces to build the entire assembly inside of.
Take a look at that link there. Anyway, basically what the plasma reactor designed for, and they even got some with flat ends on there, it looks like. Man, that's amazing. That would be perfect. But it's to show people a different way to use energy out there. You know, right now we use a resistive element that takes a lot of wattage, amperage and all that, in order to be able to heat water. And so if you're looking for clean, renewable, alternative type energies, now, this is the technology that you need to be looking at, because it doesn't require a lot of wattage in order to be able to do it. This thing, I'm running mine with a 12-volt battery using a Beckett oil burner igniter that's set up to go from 12-volt at about 4.8 amps max. And the output side is what I care about. I don't care about the input side, because we could actually modify that circuit where it wouldn't take 4.8 amps in order to be able to do what I'm talking about. It's the output side that is putting out 20,000 volts at 30 milliamps. Imagine being able to heat water in the milliamp range. You know, that's pretty good energy transfer. And since it's so easy to make high voltage, you could do this, you know, build your own custom generators or wind turbines or whatever. All you need is that high frequency. That's it. There's the arc that goes across there. Even whenever you're looking at just static electricity alone, if you can see it, there's heat involved. What you got?
That is a carbon arc rod.
Yeah.
99.99% pure carbon.
Cool. I can see a lot of uses for something like that. Those would be...
And they're dirt cheap, too.
Yeah. Anyway, the plasma technology doesn't just have to stop at heat and water. It could also be used to basically transfer different frequency ranges to get the atoms excited. You know, like whenever you put water in a microwave oven, since water is a dipole molecule, we know that if we bombard water with microwaves, microwaves is short, super short, fast wave, and we can get those water molecules to move so rapidly, produce enough friction that it would actually cook the food. And so microwave ovens are out there in existence.
Well, that explains exactly what you're talking about. Voltage, amps, wattage, that's not it's important. It's the frequency. It's that the water heat itself. Just get it moving. You don't need heat to move water.
And that's right? That's what I've been trying to say. But my terminology stinks to the extent that I basically start fights when I tell people I don't care about current watts and amps. I'm not trying to say you could run your house off of this type of energy. What I'm talking about is taking whatever energy you've got access to and changing it to a completely different form. And redesigning the way that you use energy. There ain't no reason why you couldn't literally specifically design a doggone electric motor to run off of high voltage. You know, it just means you're going to have a lot of turns on that coil of wire. It's the only difference. The railroad tracks that you're going to use to move that energy from one place to the next. But if you can boil water in the milliamp range, that opens up a lot of doors for heating and, you know, maybe hot shower or whatever, and even cooking. I want to build one of these. It's not going to be as pretty, but one of the containers that holds the water in there is actually going to be a cooking surface. Like these ones that you've seen in the video, they have a plastic lid on them. Imagine if they got a metal lid on it, and the heat from that water sitting inside that container will actually heat up that lid as well. I think it's only 100 and some odd degrees you can cook an egg. So you could literally cook on the top of your water tank. You see what I mean? When that water is hot and the heat's rising, you could use it as a cooking surface. You could use it as a lighting surface, depending on how you actually build the reactor itself, like build it like they do fluorescent lighting without the mercury portion of it. And you could literally get visible light, heat the water up, be able to cook on the doggone thing, and get rectified DC current out the other for charging batteries. Folks, it's not any different than what we're doing, with the exception is it doesn't follow the resistive path to get there. All you're doing is changing the energy from one state to the next. And according to the laws of physics, as energy can neither be created nor destroyed, we're not trying to create it. We're not trying to destroy it. We're not even trying to get out more than we put in. All we're showing is that you can literally take that energy and use it so efficiently that you can get a heck of a lot more work done with it. You know, if you think about the internal combustion engine and how it's only 36% efficient, imagine if that engine was 100% efficient. 100% efficiency means that every bit you put in there, you get that much work out the other end. And it can be done. It can be done by the way that you put the fuel in there. It can be done by the way that you guide the waste heat back into the system to utilize it. There's no reason why you have to have something like a catalytic converter on an internal combustion engine if you got this thing running 100% efficient. You see what I mean?
It can be done, amigo.
That's all I've been trying to show everybody all along. You don't need over unity or zero point for that matter. It'd be nice to find the holy grail of free energy. But I'm saying, if you can make these things 100% efficient from the get-go, everybody can afford to run them. If you are only using a gallon per day as opposed to a whole full tank per day, then everybody can afford to run them. And if you can use it, the most abundant fuel source on the earth, which is water, that's even better. You know? I looked into to what you were talking about, your cold steam turbine, Raymond.
Yeah.
And until I started looking really in depth in it and realizing that when water boils in a vacuum, it's not getting hot. It's actually going in the opposite direction. It's getting colder.
Yes, yes.
And I was pretty impressed with that. I don't see why there ain't more people out there doing more in-depth research about that. Because as far as cooling-wise, if instead of you having to run a compressor to pressurize gas and then allow it to expand, if in turn you're vacuuming that thing down, it seems to me that the vacuum pump ain't going to have to work near as hard as the pressure pump. Am I wrong?
Exactly.
Which in turn would make it more efficient.
Yep.
And probably less dangerous, because instead of using Freon, you could use water. Literally. Yep. And if something broke in the system, then that means all you got is fresh water dumping on the floor.
Now you get it. And the thing is, like you said, it's not hot. And it is a vacuum, so there is no chance of an explosion. An implosion, maybe. But that's unlikely.
But the terminology that they use when they say boiling water in a vacuum is a misnomer, because when I think of boiling, I think of hot water.
Right.
In reality, boiling, you know, can be hot or cold.
Exactly.
So there's a little nugget of knowledge that people should like run with, because I can see all kinds of implications for that. There's tons of different ways to create a vacuum.
Yep.
And so with that said, you could use the forces of gravity to drop water down, create a vacuum just long enough to create a cooling portion, and then dump that cold water through a condenser or whatever that would basically blow a fan across there. That's kind of like how evaporative cooling works, you know?
Yep.
It's a little different.
Yep. One of the things that when people build these vapor carburetors, they're vaporizing the gas to run the gasoline engine, and it works great, and you get a whole lot better gas mileage. The thing is, in vaporizing the gas, the liquid gas that's left behind is cold.
Well,
so now you've got to put heat in that gas, but the heat is not hot. What? All you need is 100 degrees. That's it.
What got me really seriously interested in boiling water in a vacuum was when I got to thinking about the internal combustion engine and about thermodynamics and all that kind of stuff, because water will have a cooling effect inside the cylinder, which is a benefit if you use it properly, because when that piston's going up, it's producing pressure, but when that piston's going down, it's producing a vacuum. You see what I mean?
Yes. Do you know that, realize that the concept of the vacuum and boiling water, if you took some rubber hose, really small, you know, like 3/16 inside diameter, and wound it around your body, and then put a jacket on, right, in the summertime, you would want a jacket on, then you all of a sudden, you have this hose wrapped, say, 100 feet of it, wrapped around your body. Now you put a vacuum on it, the heat in the water is going to cause it to boil. And it's going to take the heat out of the water. Therefore, it's going to start drawing heat from your body. It would be your own personal air conditioner.
Yeah, you can literally design a suit like that. Somebody told me at one time that they actually had some plumbing like that for spacesuits.
Yes.
Which could explain a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, all this technology should be shared freely out there and get people's ideas sparked. You know, that's what the whole purpose of my Mad Science YouTube channel is, to get people to thinking differently than what they've been told. Everybody's like, well, you know, it can't be done or else they'd be doing it. That's a hock-a-hooey if you ask me, because You know, it ain't necessarily that it can't be done. It's that either they're not going to make enough money out off of the deal, or they want to hold this back for later on so that if, when people stop buying one product, they got a new one right in line. That's the whole way of staying in business. You don't give out your best ace card until you need to put it on the table, right?
Right.
So that's what the whole thing is.
But then that's when you show it. So about front.
If the average Joe was as impatient as I am to see the future technology and get involved and make all this kind of stuff, it'd be a done deal. There's 9 billion people on this planet, man. There's a lot of brilliant individuals who ain't in high places. There's a lot of brilliant individuals who ain't even in college or school, for that matter. There's people in foreign nations who necessity's the mother of invention, and they learn how to pipe light into the house without no electricity. They use, basically fiber optics. They're using a jug with water in it, bleach water, so that it don't get mossy inside there or clouded up or whatever. And they put these through the roofs of their house, and they're able to put in the equivalence of a 60-watt light bulb in each room. Just seal around that jug so that no water leaks in. But that's ingenuity, man. And that's what I've been trying to point out to people. These all these different YouTubers that I put on there, the one that I talked about earlier with that the one that made the magnet pistons on there, he's got it put together with a bunch of junk. But it works. And it takes somebody with a really brilliant mind to take a bunch of junk, put it together, and make it function for a useful purpose. It's as simple as that. You know, everything that I make is out of recycled stuff, outside of a few things that I might get to purchase here or there. That's what I use all the funding from my YouTube for, is more science projects. Pieces of copper wire or tubing or whatever material that I need. That's why whenever my YouTube's monetized, I don't really complain about it, because, you know, it helps pitch in on copper wire or whatever it is that I need to work on a project. You know, and if we all had a joint agreement about getting together on a specific project, I wouldn't have no problem, having everybody pitch in on something. I just don't want to turn it into a Send Shaziz money campaign. You know what I mean? It ain't that I want to turn down help. It's that I want partners. I want people to want to work together, and everything's accounted for. People get what they paid for. You know, that scale of justice thing. Because there's a lot of jerks out there that take advantage of people, and I'm sick of it. I'm sick of people taking advantage of people's generosity. But this deal that I'm talking about here, this is one stepping stone towards what we could actually accomplish together in science. And I'm talking real science. Everything that I talk about on here is based off of things that I've learned in real science. When I hear people come out there tell you crazy stuff about science to try to fear-monger you, I'll be the first one to step up and say, hold the phone, it ain't the way it goes down. Because that ain't what the science book says. And I think that science is something that's going to grow. If you're really going to observe things and theorize, you use what you've learned from science and the scientific method to do that. We don't make stuff up as we go. All the technology that I talk about in my plasma reactor is proven technology. And it falls right in the line of everything that was told in physics, is that light is heat and heat is light. So we know if we can see it, there's heat involved. That means we can utilize that heat to do something with. That's going to get some work done. And the least amount of energy necessary to put in there is what we want to do in order to make this thing the most efficiently. Well, I found out that using high frequency, high voltage, I can generate enough heat to burn through plastic or rubber insulation on wiring. So I'm thinking, well, if it's got that much power that it can burn, and then I know the melting temperatures of the materials that it's burning through, then that means that I could use that heat for something. what normally would have been a bad deal that would have burnt the wiring down and started a wire fire in your house is now a good thing because you're going to contain it and utilize it and guide that energy where you want it to go. And if you can do it in the milliamp range as opposed to 1500 watt resistive element that's going to send your light bill through the ceiling, wouldn't that be the better way to go? That's what I've been pointing out. So, for all those guys and gals out there that listen to me when I talk about science and tell me how I'm wrong because of what the school book said, I want to hear what you got to say now. Now that you understand what it is I've been trying to point out all along. It's not that we're trying to get free energy in the sense that you're talking about. You know, something for nothing kind of deal. People say there ain't no such thing as free energy. There's 3/4 of the world is covered in water. Water is energy. It's hydrogen and oxygen. You separate the two and you've got a potential hazard going on. But it's not a hazard in the sense that, you know, it's going to be polluting because once you burn doggone water, if that's even the proper terminology to say, once you get the energy out of that water, it's going to recombine. That's why they say water is the most stable molecule, because when you use it in an internal combustion engine, you get water out the other end. You're not burning carbon in order to get the BTUs necessary for, you know, the combustion process. And using what Raymond talked about, the cold steam process, we know that we can literally regulate the temperature inside there so it's not even going to get too hot. Because when that piston's going up, it's compressing. That's making heat. When that piston's going down, it's vacuuming. That's taking away the heat. And that's why one of the reasons why people always say, well, you can't run the car on water because of this. The second law of thermodynamics, blah, blah. Take those second law of thermodynamics and put them in the backyard somewhere. That wasn't very nice, was it?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anyway, I'm just saying, if you specifically design an engine to run on any kind of fuel, I don't care what it is, whether it's coal dust or coffee creamer or whatever, if you want it to be a heat engine, you run it like a heat engine. If you want it to be doing some cooling, then you use the thermodynamics available to you. Physics are all right with me. As long as you utilize them to make them the most efficient, and instead of complaining about why you can't get around this particular deal, don't invoke that particular deal. You know what causes it. Let's talk about violating Lenz's law. You're not going to violate Lenz's law. But if you don't want to invoke Lenz's law, then don't. Simple as that. If you understand how electrons flow according to how we've been taught, and that when you turn that light bulb on, follow the path. The path of the electrons goes through the doggone light bulb. And where does it go? Right back into the same generator you're trying to draw the power from. Even if you got a battery in between them, it's going to go from the generator to the battery, to your light bulb, back into the battery, and then back into the generator. That's the biggest mistake that everybody's been making all along. That's why these things are getting hot. Whenever there's a resistance in there, when there's energy trying to come back in, at the same time energy's trying to come back out, it gets crowded in there. Crowded causes friction, and it starts fights. And so they're in there fighting amongst each other. It's getting hot, and eventually the material that it's made out of begins to fail. The copper won't fail unless you get it completely molten, but the insulation that separates each winding from each other is going to be the first to fail. That's the weak point in every copper coil out there, is the insulation. Now, if you can design an insulation that could withstand extreme heat, that engine would last longer than anybody's engine out there. You could literally, just like electric stove, there's a 220 element inside your electric oven. And inside that electric element, there's a ceramic core on the outside, and inside that core is metal. When you turn your power on, it is an instantaneous resistive load. It's trying to fight against that power that's coming through there. That turns that metal inside that core into a molten state, and the outside of that core gets red hot. You can figure this out sometime if you ever want to. Take it outside and hook it up and put a little notch in one of those cores and watch as when you turn that thing on, it will literally spit molten metal out of the inside of that core. And if there's anything flammable around, it'll catch fire. So if there's any grease inside that old stove when you do that, it's going to catch fire. There's a lot of heat coming out of there. But nonetheless, you can run that stove and run that stove and run that stove, and unless that doggone ceramic core on the outside of that metal fails, then that core will last for years. It's a whole lot there's not very much at all that could go wrong with those cores the way that they're designed. That's pretty impressive technology, wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
Well, imagine an electric motor built the same way, to where the copper could get so doggone hot that it's literally in a molten state, and the insulation doesn't fail. You couldn't tear that motor up. The next weak point would be in the bearings. How many RPMs could you run this thing before the bearings got too doggone hot? But what if you could keep those doggone bearings cool? What if those bearings weren't able to pick up friction and use like Sky Collection did in that video that I posted in the chat room, where you got magnetic bearings with no friction points? If you had no friction to fight with, then you could spin that up to thousands of RPMs and never even have to worry about generating any heat that's going to cause that those bearings to reach their... There's a sweet point in every material out there. I don't care what material it is. For everything from a marshmallow all the way up to carbon-hardened steel, there's a sweet point in there. Once you get past that sweet point, where now that what normally would have been a hard material begins to soften up because of the heat, when all them electrons and atoms and everything are beginning to expand from the heat. Heat expands and cold contracts. We know this. If the thing stays cold, it's contracted and all the molecules are tight and it won't tear itself apart. But the moment it gets to that sweet part where the material becomes softer, the stronger material is going to win out, and it'll eat a hole right through the recesses of the bearings and everything until... You know, the viscosity of the grease or the oil that you're using to keep it cool will break down thermally, and it becomes super thin, causing more friction, which in turn causes the damage. So if you know how to control the temperature of any material, it will never fail as long as you keep it down below that temperature. It's as simple as that. So we have the capabilities to utilize wasted heat, wasted energy, to overcome friction to the extent where it never even has the capability to get hot enough. What do you think?
Yep, I love it. I do.
That's what I've been trying to point out. It ain't that things can't be done. It just needs to be properly engineered. I mean, you go on a trip somewhere, you always pre-plan for any potential hazard. You put oil in your car for a reason. But what if you redesign the engine so that none of the carbon can get past the rings itself, and the oil temperature never gets above lukewarm, just warm enough to make it fluid? That engine would last forever, man. Your bearings would never get hot. They would never reach that sweet point where they begin to fail. The piston itself and the rings on the side of the cylinder wouldn't ever reach enough friction, enough temperature to start digging into the side of the deal. It would last forever. When I was running that two-stroke motor on with electric drill spinning it over, I ran it for hours at a time and never had a drop of oil in it. All I was doing is every so often spraying in a little spritz of water, watching the temperature on the pyrometer get up to over 150 degrees. And once it reached up over 200 degrees, I'm sitting there still doing the same thing. I made it all the way up to 250 degrees. And you can see the thing start to try to buck because of the expansion of the steam and what's going on inside there. And every time I got done with it, I would take the doggone engine apart and look for any kind of damages. Never scarred the side of that cylinder once. And that was just using water alone. The water acted as a coolant and a lubricant and a fuel all in one shot. So specifically engineered to use what we know we can get water to do. Water has a lot of energy in it. You can see that when the vacuum it down, it's releasing the energy into the chamber. You can see that when you boil it with heat, it's releasing the energy into the atmosphere. And so, with physics and some basic science and the proper engineering, if anybody out there wants to tell me you can't run a car on pure distilled water, I'm going to tell you you didn't study hard enough in school.
It's really, that's just genuine fact.
It's as simple as that. You know, the electrolysis process, you generate a lot of heat in the electrolysis process. And you actually mix a little soda or like baking soda in with the water to make the water more conductive. That's not even necessary. If you're going to do the electrolysis process, you get those plates as close as you can physically get them without them being able to touch each other. Or if you could make it down to the point where you could only fit one molecule between each plate, it wouldn't take very much current whatsoever in order to be able to crack that water. And so, if it was properly engineered, you could have the perfect hydrogen cell. There ain't no reason why it couldn't be done. But every single one of these doggone hydrogen cells I see, I don't know the exact measurement, but I can see the gap in between them. It's possible to make metals of materials so close that you can't even tell there's a gap in between there, but there is. You think I'm wrong?
Well, you're not wrong, but there is an outside chance that you might have a little problem if you got them too close together. If you got them so close together, the hydrogen molecule or atom is this size, oxygen atom is that size, whichever one is the largest. If you got your plates so close together that it was less distance than the actual thickness of the molecule, then yes, you could have a problem.
Well, yeah.
But that would, you couldn't see it with the naked eye. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's going to be a sweet spot in there somewhere, and that's where the trials and testing come about.
Right, the sweet spot.
But I'm saying the reason why you got to make the water more conductive is so that that current can actually have a path. Well, if the current has a path already, then, you know, if it's like a spark gap. You get the spark gap too wide, the power can't jump across until it ionizes the air around it and creates a path to jump across
there. Right.
So the same thing with any electricity, if you think I'm wrong, try this sometime. Go to stick any plug in to the outlet on an appliance that's already on. And before you actually get that plug in there, when you get it close enough, you'll see a little tiny arc as that power jumps across that gap.
Right.
And the same thing applies with a battery. If you take and watch, go out in the middle of the night and hook your battery terminals up and watch it. Just as soon as you get that doggone battery terminal close enough to that, if the other side's connected, you'll see a little arc jump across there. That's the nature of electricity. And
right.
So, knowing that it doesn't even actually have to be touching for that energy to want to jump across that gap, then that tells you if you built a solar or a hydrogen cell with that concept, then you wouldn't have to have no sodium or anything in there to create that, make that water more conductive, because it already is.
Right.
That's my point. Making it more efficient means that you don't have to put as much in to get the job done. The same job that you want done. If an automobile is only 36% efficient, then you have to ask why. Now, if you go look at this doggone Koenigsegg, this guy built, man, I'll tell you what, that is one beautiful car inside and out, and it is probably the fastest machine on the planet. To watch this car run, I'm loving every minute of it. It doesn't have a transmission, and that's what caught my eye. I was scrolling along for videos to watch, and I saw this one that said this car doesn't have no transmission in there, and why? And it's got a high-tech torque converter in there that's set to be super efficient. It's got an internal combustion engine, and the high-tech torque converter sends it down to a generating system. There's a generator system built right into the deal, and it runs powerful electric motors that can go from 0 to 60 in less than 2.6 seconds. Now, that's getting it done. Tell me that ain't fast. 0 to 60 in less than 2.6 seconds. Are you dumbfounded?
Yeah.
That's the kind of car I want, man. It's the efficiency there. But all these machineries out there, I don't care what it is. You know, if the internal combustion engine's only 36% efficient, one has to ask why. So what's going wrong in that engine where it can't be 100% efficient? And everybody will come out, well, you know, you got friction losses, and you got this and that and that. Why you got friction losses? Why don't you got frictionless bearings? Why ain't you got frictionless contact points? Why haven't you utilized everything that you've learned in physics on how to keep something from heating up? It's as simple as that. And if it is heating up, why can't you design a system by which to cool it back down faster than it can heat up? That's the thing. Look, a lot of people said that thermoelectrics was probably the worst form of ways to get heat, because once it gets past a certain point, once it gets too hot, it becomes less and less efficient. Just like solar panels, the same thing. Solar panels, they say, aren't 100% efficient, because once they get to a certain temperature, they lose efficiency. Well, cool it down. See what I mean? Keep it cool. Utilize that waste heat to do something. Get more work done. Make it more efficient. We don't have an energy problem. We got a common sense problem. We got an efficiency problem. We're not utilizing things to their best advantage. Remodify, re-engineer the internal combustion engine. By now, like right now, we're still using slip rings inside there, because ain't nobody found a better way to do it. You know, I'm sure that somebody out there's got a good idea on how to do it better, where you don't have a slip. You know how the ring actually works around that piston, Raymond? Raymond. Guess I lost him. Well, anyway, if you ever look at the snap rings that's on a piston, the actual rings, you'll see that one side of that ring is split. When the combustion process happens, the pressure of that combustion actually spreads that ring out up against the cylinder wall to make a tight seal. And depending on what engine you got, you may have anywhere from 2 to 3, possibly even 4 rings on one piston. And so when that compression happens and it spreads that ring out against the cylinder wall, then that seals it up. But at some point, some of that carbon is going to make it all the way down through that entire set of rings. And guess where it's going? Right into your oil. That's why your oil looks black. If none of that carbon could escape that cylinder, then your oil would never get black and would not require a filter. You could put, if you did have any friction losses and you was actually shaving off pieces of metal, If you look in the bottom of your oil pan, majority of the oil pans out there nowadays have a little magnet in the bottom of your oil pan in your transmission and your engine. That's because if any bearings are in there failing or whatever, that as that metal's coming by, that magnet will grab it up so that it ain't getting sucked back into the bearings or up into the piston so that it ain't grinding it up. It's like putting sandpaper inside your piston. It does damage. And as long as that magnet grabs up any metal, then you can, when you do your inspection on your motor and you drain your oil out, you can pull that plug and see if there's any metal shavings on there, and you'll know your engine's got a problem that needs to be resolved. But if it's properly engineered to begin with, you're never going to reach that sweet point where it's actually going to reach the breakdown temperature of the material, and it ain't no possibility for it to ever to start grinding itself in half. And doing that means that if there ain't no carbon getting down into the oil, then your oil ain't getting black. If the temperature of the oil is remaining cool enough that it's transferring the heat away from any moving parts, and those parts can't never reach that temperature, then that oil will stay perfectly clean and you will never have to change your oil. I'm saying never. N-E-V-E-R. Never have to change your oil in a properly engineered internal combustion engine. Period. No ifs, ands, or buts.
You know, that's one thing about oil that a lot of people don't understand, what you just said. Oil does not wear out. It gets contaminated.
Yep.
The oil itself never wears out. It will burn up. It will change viscosity because of burning or getting too hot. It will get contaminated. Water, gas, metal shavings, but it will not wear out.
Okay, follow me through this process, folks. So,
if you can keep it clean.
I just got my fresh oil change.
Yeah.
Alright, and I'm driving my car down the road. My car, I'm out there, I'm having fun. Woohoo, I'm mashing the gas and I'm just going for broke and just having a blast, enjoying that motor vehicle experience. But as my motor's going up and down, the pistons inside there are sucking carbon down inside the doggone oil, which is causing that oil to start to turn black. It's getting crudded up. But hey, I've already pre-planned for this because in my oil change, I got a brand new clean filter. All right. Well, all
right.
Now my black oil from the in the oil pan is being sent through that filter before it goes back up inside my machine. So I keep fresh oil going through there, and as long as my filter's got some room for the fluid to be able to make it through, then my engine's always getting clean oil. But
you know,
at some point, when my filter becomes plugged up, well, now it gets harder and harder for my oil to get through, and so that makes the temperature of my oil get hotter and hotter, which makes the temperature of my machine get hotter and hotter, and at the worst case scenario, my oil filter completely plugs up. It stops the fluid from circulating through my oil, and now instead of my oil going through the oil filter, it's pressurizing the inside of the oil chamber, which is causing the oil to go up backwards up through the rings on the compression stroke or out the seals of the side of the motor. And so now my motor starts to spit oil out the side or sucking it up and burning it out the back. And then I get the smoke out the back of my car from the oil burning. So,
you know, in all the vehicles I've ever owned in my life, I change my oil every 45,000 to 50,000 miles, whether it needs it or not. But I change my filter regularly every 3,000 to 4,000 miles. And I have never had a problem. I've never had a vehicle that I did not get, a new vehicle that is, that I did not get less than 250,000 miles on that engine before it quit. And I, like I said, I change my oil every 45,000 to 50,000 miles.
Well,
but I changed the filter so that it's not contaminated. Oh, once in a while now, I'll buy a little oil additive, because the additives in oil do dissipate. The additives that keep your engine clean, this, that, and other. But the oil never wears out. it gets contaminated. That's all there is to it.
Yep, that's it. Matter of fact, if you go learn from a little bit from the U.S. Navy, they got these systems out there, fuel oil service pumps and other filtration systems, where essentially they heat the oil up and they filter out all the crud and take the fresh oil off the top, and it's ready to go again, ready to be reused.
Exactly.
And knowing a little bit about science, that oil will float on water, you can literally drain off all the water before you get to the oil, and so you're going to take the water out.
Uh-huh.
So, at home, if you really want to save yourself some serious money, you build you an oil filtration barrel where you pour the black stuff in one end and the clear stuff comes out the other end, and you just refill your jugs back up and reuse your oil over and over and over again.
Yep.
That's what the Navy does. They don't dump their oil out in the ocean because it's dirty. They clean it up.
Yep.
And then they wait till they get to the doggone shore, and whatever sludge they got, they pump it into proper containing units and takes it out and cleans it up yet again. It's never dumped over.
You know, I used to do exactly that when I lived in North Carolina. I had a little small farmette. And all my farm tractors and rotor spaders, rotor tillers, everything, including my cars and my trucks. I never threw my oil away. I would change my oil, put in new oil, and I would take the old oil and put it in 5-gallon buckets. Then I would just let it set for a month or so. All the crud, water, and metal shavings would settle to the bottom. The trash that was lighter than oil would float on the top. I would skim that off. And then take the oil itself would be nice and clean. I would take it and siphon it off, and save it for the next time I change oil. And just reuse it over and over and over again. Just clean it up.
Yep. There's a lot of people that do that. Most of the people don't. Just go out and buy brand new oil.
Yeah, I have 2 farm tractors, 2 rotor spaders, 2 pickup trucks, and an automobile. And I mean, for years I never bought oil. I mean, I'd buy a little because you'd get some loss. But in 10, 15 years, I bet you I didn't buy 5 quarts of oil. Just kept reusing the same oil over and over and over again. And like I told you, I have never had a vehicle that I got less than 250,000 miles out of it.
All right, well.
Just oil clean.
I think it is time to take a coffee break. What do you think?
I do too.
Alright, folks, you're listening to me.
Can you hear me? Give my creation life!
Ah, crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Can you really?
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
All right, and we're back. You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. Also, if you like Mad Science, look up old Shaziz on YouTube up there. It's like, I can't even remember how many videos are up there anymore. But a lot of good ideas and some exciting, fun, crazy stuff as well. Anyway, you know, it was a time in history, I used to wonder why things were done a certain way. When I normally didn't know why they were done, I usually tried to figure it out. But one time by accident, I figured it out. Those little plastic tips that's on the end of your shoestring. I used to wonder, wonder who invented that and what was that put them to the need to do that. Well, one time I'm out tromping through the woods and that little plastic tip apparently went off of my shoestring, and as I'm going through the woods, I start picking up a bunch of stick tights in the end of my shoestring. By the time it's all said and done, I had this big old wad of stick tights stuck to the frayed out end of my shoestring. Now, if I wanted to re-thread my shoes, I'm going to have to cut that mess off and find another plastic tip and put it on there. But either way, necessity is the mother of invention. Somebody was wise enough to figure out if you put a little piece of plastic on the end of a string, it won't fray out and you can thread your shoe with it. That's the common sense that I like to get to. And that's why when I see people out there with smaller YouTube channels than mine, and they got good ideas and are actually trying to repurpose things, I like to try to promote them. And that's why I'll post these videos over here. So if you're interested in any of these videos and these people I'm talking about, jump over there and click on some of them videos. Tell them old Shaziz sent you over there to take a look at it. There's links all over the doggone website. Maybe it's not the fanciest website in the world, but some people say I'm cluttered. Hey, I never said I was a web designer. Now did I? I don't think I said that, but jump over there and check out Zero Fossil Fuel and Russ from RWG Research at opensourceenergy.org, or Rich Planet Industries. There's so many different links over there. You can get to Zero Fossil Fuel's YouTube channel and Russ's YouTube channel, teslamaker.com, different places out there. These aren't paid sponsors. They're just people that I saw that had some good information. Revolution Green, Alternative Energy News, and I even got a listing up there for Monarch Glass. Those are the ones that made the artistic version of the plasma reactor. They actually use their glass blowing skills to make the reactor. And so with that said, go over there and check them out. You might have something custom made for yourself or something and help them in their business. That's what this website's all about. Not only to support other networks that are doing the same thing that we're doing, but to support other people in their research. RWGresearch.com, that's Russ's website over there. He's got all kinds of cool stuff. He's got videos that go way back of all different projects that he's worked on. Got a lot of craftsmanship there. And Sky Collection, I don't even understand when Sky Collection speaks half the time, because he's speaking in Spanish and I don't speak Spanish, so I just watch and he puts subtitles in the videos and I understand what's going on, and I love his work. He's good at basically constructing things, engineering, and he's just got some amazing work going on. There's a lot of other individuals out there doing stuff. I'm about to click on this one particular one and try to stop the sound real quick to see what it was. Oh, yeah, I remember what this video was. A guy took an old 1930 Ford. Yeah, see, that's what I was talking about. He took an old 1930 Ford that he found in a barn and actually got the thing to run again. He said it's been at least 40 years before the oil changed, or the motor, since the motor last run or whatever. But it's cool that he resurrected a piece of history like that. And that's, those are the kind of things I want to share with everybody out there. So looks like Patty's in the chat room down there. Hi, Patty! Look, I'm on the radio. So what are you guys thinking, man? Get an old 1930s Model T and get it started? Yeah? No?
Yeah.
I think Raymond and Thomas went to sleep on me.
No. I'm here.
Okay, well, that moment of silence was your opportunity to talk.
Somebody can hear me?
Yeah, I heard you.
Okay.
You're live, man.
All right.
so
hi, anyway, blessing.
Everybody say hi to Patty out there chat room.
Hi, Patty.
All right, so I started off the show by complaining about just talking about a dream that I had last night that was really disturbing about an apocalyptic worldwide flood and trying to get my family and my grandchildren to safety and all that. And this is, maybe that'll never even happen, but just the mere thought that in that particular instance you ain't got nothing resolved, you can't, you're at the mercy of the weather, man. And so with the technology we've got available to us, sure would be nice to be able to engineer homes that would keep people safe and warm and cool when they needed to be. That's what mad science is all about, trying to actually look out there to what all we have available, and just when you think you've seen it all, there's always something else out there. You know, what's his name? Doggone it. I hate it when that happens. Who keeps talking about hempcrete?
Man. Oh, that's, Barry Prince.
Yeah, Barry. Hempcrete. They're talking about, he's talking about how that stuff's fireproof. You build a house out of a geodesic dome out, it'd be fireproof. So, you know, there's different materials out there that are fire resistant, fireproof, and there's different materials out there that's water resistant or waterproof. With all the different materials that we have access to and the knowledge, you build a perfectly engineered house that, you know, nobody would ever have to worry about it. If you're in a flood zone, you just start floating, you know, like a bobber. You're living in your ark, so to speak.
You know, Barry was talking about how strong that stuff is.
Yeah.
And, you know, back during the last part of the Second World War, they were making cargo ships out of concrete. Concrete will float.
Yeah. There's actually some concrete that has air inside of it, which makes it really light, too.
Well, you know, you stop and think about it. See, people say concrete floats. Well, steel floats if you shape it into a boat. Well, concrete floats if you shape it into a boat.
Yeah, that's something people didn't look at in physics. Whenever you got a big old, you realize how much one of them doggone destroyers or aircraft carrier weighs, and it's still floating on water.
Up in the thousands of tons.
Now that same boat, that same ship in the ocean would set a little lower in profile in fresh water than it would in the ocean because of the buoyancy and such. You know, salt water, it's easier to float in salt water, if you understand what I'm saying.
Right.
There's actually a lake down in, doggone it, where the heck is, where's the great salt lakes at? Man, this is terrible for radio. Hi, Patty. How you doing? Everybody's
kidding. Hey, guys. I got a kind of noisy house, so I can't be on like too much.
Oh, well, it couldn't be any worse than what Raymond's doing. He's getting phone calls on live.
I wanted to add something, though. You know, I just recently saw a video. Oh, and by the way, I love Hempcrete, too. It is amazing. But I saw a video where there was a guy had been given some documents, and what it was archaic French, and it was Templar recipes, actual recipes that are from the 1500s. Now, they were written on hemp paper, right? You could see to where there were watermarks, to where the paper had actually been wet, but it had not deteriorated any, no mold, no. The paper was still totally intact.
See, now that's impressive.
It was extraordinary to me that from the 1500s, and you could actually still read all the ink that was on this hemp, you know, if you could read archaic French, but it was all legible, and the paper was completely intact, no frayed corners or anything like that. There were a few watermarks where you could see that it had come in contact with moisture of some sort, but it hadn't in any way deteriorated any of the paper or even, you know how sometimes on regular paper it'll bleed the ink and fade the ink. None of that. It was amazing.
Well, see, people can learn from history of the things and the ways that they were made back in the day, and actually, they're always talking about resources. Unsustainable is the word they like to use. Oh, it's unsustainable. We're all going to like starve. We ain't going to have enough food and all that kind of stuff. Well, doggone it, they learned a few things from farmers way back and people who made books and papers and pens and all that kind of stuff. There's things like, for example, I got one of the original Edison bulbs, and that dang thing still works. Go to your local Walmart and buy an incandescent light bulb. You might get a year out of it if you're lucky. But generally, they don't last very long anymore. They're not made to last. And so, where their unsustainable goes through is in the quality of their craftsmanship, as far as I'm concerned. Is that rude for me to say? I'm just saying. If it's
made. No, everything is made to, today, everything is made to either become obsolete or to wear out. I mean, there's nothing made today that's made to last. You still have refrigerators from the 50s, the first electric refrigerator, all these ones that came out that are still working. I've seen them. I've had them.
Yeah, you know? I got one over my house that I know is from the 50s. It's a deep freeze, and it still works.
Yeah. You can't do that today with a refrigerator. You give it 5-6 years, and you're going to have to call the repairman in, you know? Sometimes you get it brand new, bring it in your house, and you're calling the repairman.
That's why I've been on this properly engineered kick lately, because everything out there, don't matter what it is, if it's properly engineered, you know what's going to happen whenever you run current through a wire. So the wire is going to get hot, which means it's going to mess the insulation up, and eventually the motor is going to fail. Properly engineered, it'd never fail. You wouldn't be running too much current through that doggone thing. You'd have limiters that would allow to shut the power down at certain points whenever it started the temperature rising up or something like that, you know? Thing don't have to be running all day long in order to function, you know?
I wish I had a headset made out of hemp, because I busted this one. I've got the microphone working on it, but the speakers don't work anymore, so I have earbuds in. And my mic on my headset, I'm wearing the headset with the earbuds, and it's very uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's another thing. Some of them modern day headsets that have the cord to it, where you're tethered to the machine. Weak spots are those. Everybody knows where those are. It's right in the where the jack connects to the wire, and all it takes is one little trip over that wire, and you mess the wire up, and it ain't working anymore.
I seem to go through them about once every month. This one here, the dog got to it twice, and then my grandchild got to it, so, doesn't hold up.
Hey, Steven said while we're on about refrigerators that I could use an old compressor as a vacuum pump. That's good idea because, yeah, you can. And I actually got some little 110 versions of little mini fridges that little pump in there probably worked perfect. So there's a repurposing for you. Make a vacuum pump out of an old air conditioner. Old air conditioner or an old refrigerator. Oh, there's just so much out there that we try to get all this stuff and this information out on these shows so that everybody can hear them. Heck, man, if you go out there and look on the podcast pages, there's approximately 400 or more podcasts between the Mad Science Podcast and the Knights of the Round Table. If you jump on ShaziasRadio.com and you scroll across that little top bar up there, there's drop-down menus. They'll take you to the podcast page. Look, it's pink. I don't know why it ended up pink, because the theme was red and black. But when you drop down on the Mad Science Podcast, where it says Mad Science, you'll find the podcast page. And there's several hundred podcasts out there of all kinds of ideas for all these years that we've been doing this show. So if you like any of these podcasts, share them with somebody. Give them some ideas. Get their brains moving. What's the word they say, Patty? If you don't use it, you lose it. Is that it? Yeah, I lost her again.
Yep. No, I'm here. I've got to remember which one I'm unmuting now.
Yeah, it's that silence. It's when you're on radio and you're doing a live show, it's that waiting for somebody to remember their, like Raymond's done it to me a few times. He's been trying to say something and he got his mic muted and you, gotta wait for a pause, a second in the show for him to finally realize, I have my mic muted.
Yeah, sometimes I even forget that I've got it muted. I'll talk for 2 or 3 minutes before somebody will let me know, you know.
Yeah, I've done that too. They were all like thinking I abandoned them, and I'm like, didn't realize my mic was muted. I'm sitting here talking with them as we're having a conversation. They didn't hear nothing I said. Well, that's technology for you folks. You gotta learn how to use it right. Anyway, we've been talking about all kinds of stuff today on the show. I started off by talking about a dream that I had that led me to thinking about technology and why we can't engineer things to keep everybody safe. To me, everybody on this planet's valuable. There ain't one single soul that I don't think has got some value. We need to be able to protect everybody. And if there was a worldwide cataclysmic thing coming, I think that the majority of the population would be in deep, deep, deep trouble. Because according to this dream that I had and trying to get my grandchildren to safety or whatever, you know, I don't like having dreams like that. I don't like seeing anybody suffer needlessly, you know, this made me want to go out and build me an ark, you know, the perfect house, and show the world, look, it don't matter what happens. If there's an earthquake, a tornado, a typhoon, or a tidal wave, or whatever, this house is going to float, and I got all my junk inside there in case we need to float it out for a while. Not really into building a bunker underground, because if I build a bunker underground and there's a worldwide flood, my bunker has to be airtight and watertight, which means I'm going to have all kinds of other systems in there, like a snorkel that I can float up to the top. But my luck, Patty, is if I did have a bunker and I had a snorkel that would float to the top, it'd be like a foot short. What do you think?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Murphy's Law.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, you know, I've said for years, I've been doing radio for over a decade. And throughout that whole decade, the only way people knew that my show was on is if they could hear me when I first come on. Can you hear me now? That's how I opened all my shows. So Murphy's Law followed me. And for some reason, within the past 2-3 months, it's decided to move on. So watch out, guys. Just saying.
Yep.
You know.
That's it. And there's like those little gremlins running around or something, breaking stuff or hiding.
Yeah, I used to tell people all the time that Murphy's Law is based on me.
The Army Corps of Engineers built on both sides up and down the Mississippi River. They designed them for a 100-year flood. Well, it wasn't but just a few years ago they had two 100-year floods in a row within a 5-year period. So there you go, Murphy's Law. Why didn't they build it for a 250-year flood?
Well, if it was up to me, I would have built it for the apocalyptic version of the flood. I guess I am slightly paranoid because I've been told that, you know, doomsday's right around the corner so many times that you get to thinking about it, what if, and my what if scenario is ready. My house, I like my house, it's not so bad, but it's not watertight as far as it's not going to float, and, you know, if there's an earthquake, it's probably not on the most stable ground out there, so I got some issues to work if there's some sort of cataclysmic thing going on, but I can't afford to build an ark, so maybe I need to build some little small life pads or design some suits that if the flood happens and you panic, you can hit the button and it'll air up your suit and you'll float to the top, preferably head up. My luck, I'd be upside down in the water. Can't get turned back over. That's why I don't ride in a kayak, guys. You ever seen what happens in a kayak whenever you don't keep your balance? Nobody? Do you even know what a kayak is?
I've witnessed. Yeah, you turn upside down.
Yeah, and there's a trick where you can learn how to flip it back over with your paddles, but, man, who wants to go that route? I just put outriggers on mine. I use that science to make sure mine can't flip over.
See, I'm more of a tubing kind of person, calm, sedate, just floating down the river.
Yeah, there you go.
White water. They can keep that.
Yeah, one of them big old tractor inner tubes.
My son's back here laughing.
One of them big old giant tractor inner tubes with a seat and a drink holder on it. That's the way to go. Float down the calm river.
Yeah, you get your cooler. You get one tube for you, one tube for your buddies. You know, everybody's got their own tube. And then you get the big tube. You get the big igloo ice cooler in there.
Yep.
And you just float.
And we tied all ours together so nobody, we wouldn't get separated. We just float around our little spot, but be like a train of tubes going down the river.
Yeah, you know, down south where I spent the first 20 years of my life, I was born down there, but I've been up here longer than I've lived down there. But in the summer times, man, it was like inner tubes, especially the big truck tire inner tubes.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd go on sale. There'd be a run on them, you know. You couldn't find an inner tube because of the people. And you'd go down in the river and get you like a dozen people, and you'd be going down the river, and then you'd meet up with 30 other people. And by the time you were probably a good 20 miles down the river, you had like 50 people. So we'd find a sandbar, you know.
That's cool.
Yeah. It was awesome. Yeah, I wouldn't get in the water down there now.
Yeah, it's a shame. People ain't taking care of some of these down there. When you're going on a vacation, while you're out to these beautiful rivers, don't be throwing your trash up in there, you know. Keep it clean. You know, anyway, moving on.
Well, we can thank the oil companies for what happened in Louisiana.
Oh, yeah, is that the one down where they broke the mine and dumped the crud down the river? Mine shaft.
They've been dumping. I was born and raised. I lived in the swamp, and there would be truckloads of National Guard bringing barrels, these big metal barrels, these 55-gallon barrels. They would be just trucks, like two trucks would come down maybe once or twice a year and go way up into the back of the swamp and come back without those barrels. You know, that's the kind of thing that goes on down there. The oil companies, they have leaks and they let them leak, you know. The beaches, when I was a little kid, we went to the Gulf and we'd go to Grand Isle. The beaches were awesome. They were beautiful. By the time I was 12, there was so much oil and dead fish on the beach that it stunk.
That's,
you know?
That's depressing. There was a big...
It is.
There was a big scandal around here where it was a waste management kind of company. That's not what was named. I think it was like Energy Star or something like that. Anyway, they were supposed to be getting rid of toxic waste, but they found creative ways to dump it where it wasn't supposed to be dumped, and they got in a huge bit of trouble over that deal, and probably caused a lot of long-term health effects for people. You know, folks, out there, you know, this world, we got so much potential to do things the right way and still be able to get along and be able to enjoy, the luxuries of life. But we got all the technology necessary to do it in perfect harmony with nature. That's a lot of what this show's about. I guess you could call me an environmentalist. I mean, the most part, it's just that the fact that people say that there's a need out there in the world, and I'm sitting here telling them, I'm stepping back, look at the big picture. I'm telling them, you got everything you need right there. Just put this with that, or, you know, bring this guy over here. He knows how to make this, and by working together and networking with the world, we can resolve any issue out there. Doesn't matter how big or bad the issue appears right now, I say we can resolve it. We got the technologies to do so. If we learn a little bit about what nature's taught us throughout the history of time, and you utilize that information and some basic science and common sense, we can resolve it all. I'm trying to rally the troops, so to speak. You know, if you're into saving the planet, let's do it. Let's get the job done. We can't keep treating nature the way we treat it and then expect to have clean water to drink. You know, the earth is 3/4 covered in water. Imagine if it was all polluted. And I guess you'd have a serious problem unless you know how to do some filtration. You better know how to get parasites and stuff like that out of there. Nature's trying to clean the mess up that man has made. We got knowledge out there, unbelievable knowledge. We're standing at a crossroads to where if we actually utilized everything that we have at our disposal. I talked about this car. I love this car. And I was telling everybody a long time ago that the day they get away from mechanical transmissions and into electric transmissions, you're going to have a car that would do in excess of 300 miles an hour, and there it is, man. It's a beautiful car. Got a carbon fiber body. It's got all kinds of cool tricks on it. It's futuristic. And so if you took the concept of what that dude did, he took his idea to the extreme. He took it as far, and he's still taking it farther. There's nothing stopping you if you get the right people together to do this stuff, the research, and even the guy that's just repurposing stuff. Get him into a really good lab. Let him tinker around and make the stuff that he likes to make, and you'd be surprised what they'll come up out of there. We got a lot of brilliant individuals in this world. We're just not tapping into that energy. The big companies out there, they go out there and pick up these kind of people. That's how they make the company so profitable. They bring all the most brilliant minds to their table, have them sign a deal that anything they invent in that deal is all company property and non-disclosure agreements, so when they leave, they can't even tell you what they did when they were there. Imagine if the average Joes got together and started creating this stuff. There's a lot of ideas that I thought were new. They weren't new. They'd been around for years. The plasma reactor technology that I talk about, based off of something back in the 1800s, the mercury arc rectifier. And they'd have known back then what they know, what I know, and you now know today, there wouldn't be no nuclear reactors around there, and there wouldn't be no worries about pollution. Proper materials, and we know we can do things with metals, stainless steels that keep them from rusting, and all kinds of stuff. We know that water is the most stable molecule on the earth, and it can be the most destructive molecule on the earth. So utilizing everything that we know that water is capable of, we can separate it, recombine it, get electricity, get heat, get power for an internal combustion engine, and then we get fresh water out the other side. that's a win-win as far as I'm concerned. And materials out there such as hemp that have 50,000 products or more that can actually be made that literally stand the test of time, like Patty mentioned about the papers with the information on there, recipes. There's a long time that those recipes went handed down from generation to generation. Now somebody in the future gets to benefit from them. Otherwise, they'd been completely lost. And playing
out... It probably says something like, go out and catch the oxen and dig some roots, because that's the 1500s. Can you imagine what those recipes are like?
Yeah.
And we have that. They have the actual document. This isn't something that somebody has said, oh, this is historical, and I remember hearing story. You actually have the document that is intact as the day that they wrote it. I mean, to me, that is amazing. That is truly just amazing to me that and where's it been until they found it, you know?
Yeah.
Still intact. It's just when we hear these things, when I hear these things, the first thought that comes to my mind is, why did we ever stop? Why would you stop using something? Sorry about the noise. The natives are getting restless.
Yeah.
There we go. I'm going to mute for a second.
Well, worldwide corporations, they got paper backups and they got digital backups. Imagine what the world would be like if suddenly the internet and all the digital things in there just went kapooey. And you could no longer get any information off of them. They were just blank. You know? All this information gone in a flash. That's one of the reasons why I don't think nuclear war would be a good idea. Start losing all your intelligence.
Stephen from the chat asked if the recipes had been scanned in and shared. I'm not sure if they have yet. I do know that they're written in archaic French. So it's not like the French. Somebody who took French today would have a really hard time translating it. So they're going to take it to a university. I think it's the University of either Michigan or maybe Wisconsin, somewhere around there. And they're going to take it and have it translated. There's like 4 or 5 different pages of just all recipes. And these are from the Templars, you know. This is... what historical stuff this is. I mean, it's not the juicy stuff like we know where the Grail is, but it gives you an insight to this group of people and what their daily lives might have been like, you know?
Yeah, and a piece of history that otherwise would have been lost. You know, lost in time. That
yeah, we might have a Templar cookbook coming up, you know?
Well, I couldn't wait till the English version gets out so I can read it.
You know, one thing y'all talking about reminds me of back years ago when I was a young man in my early to late 20s. I had a little farmette, 2.5 acres in North Carolina. And just for a lark and a hobby, I wanted to learn how the old timers, you know, would tend their gardens and their fields with like a horse or a mule or whatever. And I had 7 horses at the time. So I bought some old farm equipment in different farm auctions and stuff like that. And I got out there, and next thing you know, I was doing just like in the movies, you know. You watch a farmer out there with got a mule hooked to a plow, and he's fighting that plow, and you think to yourself, wait a minute. The man couldn't do that from sunrise to sunset. I don't care how physically in good shape he was. He couldn't do that. But to plow that much land? Fighting use every ounce of strength you've got just to plow one row? Something's wrong here. So I went out and I started driving through the country late in the evenings, and I would see, you know, 3 or 4 guys, older guys, sitting on the porch, drinking their iced tea and smoking their cigars. I'd go up and talk to them and figure out, you know, what's going on. And they would tell me, teach me different things to do. Before you know it, I was plowing my garden, an acre and a quarter garden, with my Tennessee walking horse. I was walking beside the plow on solid ground holding the plow with one hand and drinking a cup of coffee with the other. That's how easy it is if you don't think the old timers are stupid. If you realize that they knew things that we don't know because we don't care anymore. I'm plowing an acre and a quarter ground, having the time of my life, enjoying every second of it. There was no physical work involved. It was just me and my horse walking around and talking, and of course I did all the talking. But, I mean, you know, I was sharing something, you know, with my horse. I enjoyed that. I really did, because it was not physical work. I did it the way the old timers did. Old people had stories to tell if you just shut up and listen.
Yep, we sure could learn a lot from the elders of the world. Doggone it. We're down to the wire again. It's that time again for Mad Science to come to a close. But, you know, folks, if you ever want to make any advancements in this world, we got to get people like us together and do this networking and bringing ideas to the table. I sure would hate to see us waste this potential opportunity right now, because we're standing in what I like to call the golden era of time, because we have actually access to information that back in those days folks didn't have. It was word of mouth and passed down from generation to generation. And now you have the opportunity to talk to people from all kinds of different cultures and share their ideas and information. Man, what we could do together if we actually put our minds to it. If we really wanted to resolve all the issues of the world, I'm telling you, it could be done. We got everything that we need, scientifically, material-wise and all that. You know, if we ever make it past the greed stage or the it's all about me stage, we're going to have it made. You know, otherwise we'll probably have the Mad Science and the Knights of the Round Table 100 years down the line when whoever inherits it, if they choose to take up that mission in life. So, before we get up out of here, you guys got any last thoughts? Raymond's on the phone.
Yeah.
Mute your mic, Raymond. We don't want to hear your phone call. Thomas, you still around?
No.
No. You got any last thoughts?
No, not really.
No. How about you, Patty?
I just wanted to say I posted in the Super Chat the link to the video that I was talking about with the Templar recipe. And this is from some people who do ciphering. It's a whole big thing. It's very, very interesting. It goes on every year and stuff. These people have a lot of really good information. This was a gift to him for doing the puzzles that these ciphers set out. So it's really interesting. You might want to check that out.
Check that out.
But other than that, you know, it just goes to show you that there are so many people with the ability to make these things happen that we need to have happen, that can bring the old with the new, combine the two, and make a better world than what we have right now. And all we need to do is decide to do it. You know, throw away all the ifs, ands, or buts. And just take that step forward and meet each other, you know, and start talking with each other. And I'm almost 100% positive. I am 100% positive that when we start doing this in earnest, that we will cure what ails us. I really do think that we can do this.
I believe that too. Stephen pointed out in there that the reason why we don't have basically hemp paper and all that kind of stuff on a major deal is because it was the threat to the wood burns, so they funded a film called Reefer Madness and vilified marijuana and asked for it to be banned, as everyone called it hemp or cannabis. Nobody realized what they were banning till it was too late. Which is essentially, if you really do the research, you'll find out that hemp and marijuana may be cousins to each other from the type of plant, but one of them, One of them is the happy grass and the other one ain't. One is just to make clothes and paper and cool stuff out of rope. They used to have hemp rope, what used to be famous. Strong, too. Anyway, we got all these old technologies and all the new technologies, and if you ain't got nothing done today, it's because you just ain't done it yet. It's as simple as that.
So, you know, back in the Second World War is when DuPont developed nylon rope, and DuPont funded the making of the Reefer Madness movie almost 100%. They did put out several million dollars to lobbyists in Congress to help get this law passed.
And back then that was a lot of money.
It was money. That's all it was. It was just money. It had nothing to do with Reefer Madness, had nothing to do with smoking marijuana. It was just money. They developed nylon rope. They needed to sell it, and a war was going on. Duh, they could sell a lot of it to the Navy.
Well, you know, they got all kinds of excuses why to go to war and tear stuff up, but don't seem like they got too many good excuses why they can't seem to get their act together as far as taking that big, giant military-industrial complex and doing some good with it, such as putting people in houses and feeding people that are hungry and healing the sick.
That's exactly why I put out the challenge to the listeners earlier in this show. Shaziz will not take donations. Well, he will if you don't let him know where it comes from. And if you donate money to his research, I promise you, because I know Shaziz, I know him like he's my own blood brother, every penny you give him will be used for that research and nothing else. And I said he needs a minimum of $500 to get him started so he can get the right equipment to work on this plasma deal. The thing is, I will donate $1 for every dollar that our listeners donate, up to $500. I'm sitting right here. I've got my checkbook in my hand. I'm just waiting for people. Look, all we need is 250 people to donate $1 for the plasma research of Shaziz. His knowledge, his experience, his experiment, work or not, he will share it with the world for free.
Yep. I want to lay it on the table and give it to people that way we can do some, if people want to buy like a doggone kit form of it, we can send it out to them and they can research it and test it as well, and that way everybody knows it's a real deal, you know?
Yes.
Once you got that technology in your hand and you can run with it and just keep on going, that's the same thing we'll do with every other existing technology after that.
Just less than a cup of coffee, you can help Shaziz do the work for the people.
I won't go down that road.
Money, right?
Don't feel sorry for me. Feel sorry for yourselves if we let our world just continue to deteriorate. That's what I'm worried about.
No. You want to put your money to good use, folks? Put it to good use. Don't give it to a company that's going to feed the hungry children of the world, and they're going to put 90 cents out of every dollar you donate in their pocket. Shaziz won't put any of it in his pocket. He'll put it 100% toward research, and any development he makes will be given to the public for free.
Yep, what's wrong with putting that entire dollar towards the same cause, man? That's what they should have been doing all along. Anyway, I'm 51 years old. We got to get up out of here, but I know there's other people older than me out here, but still, I've been around long enough to know it don't take no 30 years to feed the hungry, and it don't take no 30 years to, or 51 years or whatever to basically put everybody in a house where they can live comfortably and enjoy all this kind of stuff. People of the world, y'all got to get your act together, and there's people out here that want to help you do just that. So let's gather, let's network, let's do some work. Let me tell you one thing before we peel up out of here. I met an Amish guy here recently. I'll have to post some information, because if you ever want a building built, these guys are incredible. They got these get-togethers where they take anywhere from 15 to 2,000, or anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 men. And in one day, they raise an entire barn. They got several hundred guys on one side raising up a 1,600 pound wall, and they peg these things in together, and in one day, this Amish group has able to throw a barn together that is quality and will be around for generations to come because of the way that they put them together. Now, we could learn a lot from those individuals, and I'd love to go up there just one time to watch this in real life. I'm sure you can Google it. There's probably episodes of DIY out there that he was actually involved in one where they filmed a barn raising like that. And you can't imagine what that would look like. 1,000 men coming together to put up a barn for somebody. And most generally when they do that, it's to help somebody out. They don't buy insurance like the rest of us out there buy insurance. They are their insurance. If your barn burns down, the community rallies and they gather, and within a day's time, they got your barn back up. And while their men are raising the barn, the women are helping out and cooking, and the kids are playing. And sometimes, in the cases of this, the kids are actually even helping. It's fun. It's educational. But there's a lot you can learn from different cultures, folks. Don't overlook it. Don't overlook the opportunity that's standing right before your very eyes. And if I can put any information out there, a good idea for you, and it helps to benefit you and the rest of society, and we pave the roads into the future for our children and our children's children. Isn't that what it's all about, guys and gals?
Yep. E pluribus unum.
Well, we gotta go. Bummer, ain't it?
Yep.
All right, folks, you've been listening to Mad Science. If you like these podcasts, please share them around out there. Bring more people to the table. You know, if we get the chat room so clogged up, we got to open another chat room. That's one cool thing about cyberspace and the Knights of the Round Table, which I hope you join me with tomorrow, is that we can stretch the table out as wide as it necessary. There's a lot of room in cyberspace. What do you think?
I think you're right.
All
no,
right.
I don't think you're right. I know you're right.
Anyway.
Yes, indeed.
We're on it, folks. Go listen to TCT Radio. They got a lot of good people over there. Go visit them in the chat room. Tell them Shaziz said.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission. To explore strange new worlds. To seek out new life and new civilizations. To boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Can you hear me? In my creation! Fly!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.